D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. It's a Wednesday at 5 p.m., which means we are joined by our friend Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Hi, Hutton. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Great to be back with you.
Yes, thank you for joining us as always. So you were out at the Super Bowl last week with Withrow. We had him on the show on Friday. He told us about your interview with Tony Vitello. Some really interesting behind the scenes provided by Chad. But what were some of the more juicy tidbits you heard during your week in the Bay Area at the Super Bowl?
Well, I mean, it just with Vitello, you know, the crazy thing is it's about to be very abrupt for him. Even more so than what it was in Knoxville, I think, with his popularity / his ability to just walk down a street. He was able to do that. That's a luxury for him. And we were just walking down the street in front of fans, in front of the stadium, in front of workers, and they didn't even do a double take. Like, it kind of figured out who he was or what he was doing. And I told him during the interview, I said, this is about to end, man. Like, once pitchers and catchers report, which was, Tuesday, everyone's going to know exactly who the Giants manager is. That was not the case. And that was the surprising part. In fact, he had not walked through the ballpark the way we just did last week until we did it with him. The entrance that we went through, all of that. So it was that was eye-opening for me. I figured, I mean, if I were the manager, and especially at his age, I'd be all about that park. Beautiful park, by the way. First time I'd been in there.
The ratings were released for the Super Bowl yesterday.
Yep.
It averaged 124.9 million viewers across multiple NBC platforms. And I think everybody was rushing to see what the ratings for the halftime show would be.
Yep.
Bad Bunny's halftime show averaged 128.2 million viewers from 8:15 to 8:30 Eastern, the fourth most watched halftime in Super Bowl history. What is your main takeaway from the ratings for the game and the halftime show?
I'm shocked that it's not the most watched halftime show based on how many people talked about it. It's like, love it or hate it, you're going to watch. It's like Howard Stern. He made his living off of people who hated him more than people who liked him, because everyone listened. And I think, it was almost exactly 5 million down from a year ago. I look at that and I think, the AFC and NFC championship games were down a bit. And the Super Bowl this year, at least from the streaming angle on Peacock, was behind a paywall. That was not the case last year with Fox and how they distributed that through their online streaming. So I think that plays a factor. But look, it up and down, no matter what, it's the most watched TV show event of the year. Everyone's tuned in, and the halftime show's not for me. It's for the viewer who's not a football fan who wants to tune in, and that's what they're going after. They're going after the international market. They're going to play by the end of next season, they'll be in 12 different cities internationally that they've played in. And they've already surpassed, 60 different international games that they've kicked off with since this international effort that they've done through Goodell. That's what this was all about. It was the Spanish-speaking audience that they're after.
To that point, Telemundo averaged 3.3 million viewers. It peaked during the halftime show at 4.8. million viewers.
That's it. I mean, I needed subtitles, but I need subtitles for practically anybody nowadays.
I still use subtitles every day. So
yeah, I don't like to. I mean, if I don't use subtitles, I gotta have the TV turned up to, you know, the loudest volume there is, because I'm having a hard time of hearing at times. But Hutt, what do you think about the game in general? You know, some people didn't like it because it was more of a defensive game, but for me. It being a defensive game, it sort of suited me best, because I think you got more dramatics toward the end, at least right before, you know, they got all the interceptions and everything, the interception fumble by Drake May. But what did you think about the Super Bowl as a whole, the game?
I mean, the fourth quarter was more entertaining than the game last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a blowout last year by the Eagles over the Chiefs, but there was more scoring. But it you know, to each his own on this. I think the divisional matchups are the best weekend of football, period. After the wild card weekend, and from there, Mace, I don't know if you agree. I mean, the Super Bowl, by and large, is normally a blowout. It feels that way.
At least the last 2 years, it has been. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, even kind of growing up, I feel like it's been lopsided. Now we've been spoiled to some good games. We saw 28-3, you know, the comeback there. But you know, it's in many cases it can be lopsided. I don't want it to be. This felt a lot different than the scoreboard dictated. Hmm. You know, that I never felt like New England was in control. And once Seattle got in touch with the quarterback there, with dominating the offensive line, that's all she wrote, because they don't need to increase pressure to get pressure on the quarterback. They did that all night.
And I think we saw a little bit of the Drake May jitters,
no doubt,
in that game, because he looked totally confused. And you know, listen, he's a young quarterback, and this is a learning experience. You hate to have that experience on a bigger stage, but for him, it's a learning experience. And I know, you know, New England fans aren't worried about their signal caller, but we were having a discussion earlier about, you know, the Titans' backup quarterback and what they should do, because we were talking about Malik Willis and his potential of, you know, being a starting quarterback somewhere this offseason, maybe Miami, because he's more familiar with the head coach.
Yes.
But when you look at Will Levis, what do you think is sort of the route they should go with him?
You know, Levis, if he sticks around, he's on the rookie contract. Mace, if we're going to compare him to Willis, they're going to be different right now. You know, Willis is the clear answer to, you know, the opportunity ahead of him. Right now, Levis is still, the last time we saw him, he's making all those mental errors, and he's coming off of the shoulder rehab or elbow rehab, one of the two. In the model that we saw with Sam Darnold, it took Darnold how many teams? Four teams? Mm-hmm. 7 years. I know that, to reach a Super Bowl. Willis, I think, is a great example of finding the right fit, the right coach, and the right mentality going in. I mean, he's already kind of living the unlocked version of himself as a professional, like a 130-plus passer rating over the 2024 and 25 seasons for him. Mm-hmm. Kevin O'Connell and Clint Kubiak has done that with Darnold. They simplified his reads. They leaned into his vertical arm strength. And I'm with you. I think Miami makes a lot of sense. I could also see him, maybe the Jets, maybe the Browns. If I'm Willis, I sign a 2-year deal and make some money. If I'm Levis, if it's not Tennessee, I'm trying to play the same path that, you know, Darnold did, that we're seeing with Jimmy Garoppolo right now. I'm going to one of those offenses out west in San Francisco or in LA with those coaches and just trying to soak everything in for a year if it's my choice. It's not. Mm-hmm. But Brian Daboll, with the way he's worked with quarterbacks in the past, maybe it can unlock some things for him. But I don't think it's the same type of trajectory that we're seeing with Malik Willis right now.
So would you be of the mindset, Hutt, to be looking to shop Levis around, or are you curious, just with Daboll coming in and new everything, that maybe with another year, a little more maturity, that he could improve?
Yeah, I think to shop him around, he's got to show improvement, Willie. You know, the bonehead plays, those are the last highlights for him. You know, he needs a rehab year. Needs to be a backup in a stable organization. Just again, like Sam Darnold's year in San Francisco before he can realistically challenge for a starting job again. And if I'm trading him, I'm at least trying to, if I'm trading for him, I'm trading for the idea that quarterback's going to come in and at least compete for the job. That's not Will Levis right now to me. I'm fine with Daboll keeping him around a year. They've got to improve in their backup situation. And
so would you be looking to sign an additional guy that fits the profile? So you would have – it would be a little crowded, but you would bring the three people in. The new guy, Levis,
and – But then again, but if you're keeping him around, you're extending him, right, at some point. So I'm not bringing him back.
If he warrants that. You could just let him walk.
Yes, but if he warrants it, then you've got – then you've rehabbed him for another team, more or less, because you've got your franchise QB.
That is the dilemma, but is that worth rolling the dice on? I think it might be.
Yes, but again, I'm only doing it based on the contract right now. You know, they kept him around. They allowed him to rehab, all that stuff. Is he an asset? I just don't know what he brings in terms of value in a trade return. You know, there's not a great quarterback crop again in rookies. Maybe we do see some more trades, but I don't think Levis is one to bring very much for this team right now. Maybe you're better off keeping him and then trying to potentially show if he has to play, he can show that he's worth a draft pick or two.
Would you be willing to carry him as a third guy if you wanted a veteran?
I think I would have to. That's the way I'm bringing him back. He's competing for the backup job.
Okay.
I can't just hand him the backup job right now.
Another thing that we have been intrigued about is the tailback position. We've talked about it some, but with Kenneth Walker doing what he did, and he, you know, there's probably his agent was probably thrilled to go, boy, this is going to add some zeros to the paycheck here. Does he intrigue you as an upgrade over Tony Pollard?
Yes. You know, Daboll's going to want the banger, right? In terms of who's staying, who's going, they could save $7 million by moving on from Pollard. I like Pollard. I do.
Yes, everybody does.
But in Daboll's offense, they need the banger to complement a guy like Tajay Spears. I think Pollard is a bit redundant given his age and the fact that we didn't see very much from the run game until the second half of the season. That can be game plan. That doesn't have to be just on him. But things just didn't get going. And I think as the Titans build and add talent, they build identity. Coming off a 3-14 season, I'm trying to find the running back I can mold the offense around and help shape what is the core of the offense around Cam Ward. I'm looking for that. I would tend to look for that in the draft. I would allocate my money at wide receiver and edge if I'm doing anything free agent-wise. But I think running back in the draft is fine, given some of the names and the depth of that position right now. Just casually glancing at some of these available players early on in this draft process.
Tennessee's got a game tonight in Starkville.
Yep,
it's always scary, I think, when you're in these games and you're thinking you should win this game, but when you go on the road, it's never easy. At times it can be really tough, but tell me where you think their team is right now with Tennessee. Like your expectations, it's such a different team than the last few that we watched. So it's kind of new territory. So does this team have a chance to peak at the right time?
I think that they're very up and down. If they find continuity through both halves, yes. You know, Amick continues his current trajectory. But, you know, he did some things at the end of the first half against Kentucky. The season began with a bang. You know, they got the neutral site win over Houston. They have a mid-December skid when they drop three straight, Kansas, Syracuse, and I forget the other, Illinois. But look, they're a tough out right now, right? And I think, Willie, what would you put them at in the Willie Donick bracket, a 4 or 6 seed?
Tennessee?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think. Tough out is a good way to say it. I still want to see if they can improve from now until the end of the season, because I still think the committee should, even though they always say that they don't. This may just be me. I may be in the minority. I think it should matter how you're playing in the last 10 or 15 games of the season, because there's so much turnover on the rosters every year. And so it might take a couple of months to gel. And so I would like to weigh that a little bit more, and I understand, like, if you get a huge win in November, you should get that on your resume. But you see what I'm saying? Like, this is so many new guys. I think there's plenty of room for improvement between February 1st and March 1st.
Well, and maybe that gel that we're discussing with Tennessee, the point you made, that's going to come for Tennessee if it happens on the defensive end. You know, defensive intensity for a full 40 minutes when the shots stop falling. Because they've got Amit, but you've got Gillespie, Opara. I mean, there are guys that Rick Barnes within the defense. They have a top 60 nationally ranked defense, but things typically fall off at certain points.
Yeah, they're used to having the first. You know, they're number one or number three. Like they've been that high the last few years. That's the standard.
Yep, and then we always see Rick Barnes teams, unless it's the tournament. Rick Barnes teams not match up very well with Kentucky, but. You know, you're right. I mean, if they peak at the right time, absolutely go on the road. They have the talent, but I see them more of a tough out that's going to battle than seeing them as the one of the front runners this season. That would be Vanderbilt, not Tennessee.
Yeah, and then they, you know, since they beat Louisville, which was early in the season, Louisville were ranked 11 at the time. They've lost to Arkansas, which is 18th. They've lost to Florida. They've lost to Kentucky twice. And then their only top 25 win was against Alabama, and that was a hard-fought game. So you're right, which you believe they are a good team, but is this a team like they've had in prior years that you believe can make a deep run?
It's a nail-biter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not a deep run. I don't buy that right now. Mm-hmm. But they're going to knock out. I see them as a team that knocks out a couple of other good teams that believe they can make a deep run. Mm-hmm.
Now we were having
that talented.
Yeah, we were having an interesting conversation about the what if, because obviously Darnold wins the Super Bowl, and when he was a free agent, everybody thought, hey, the Titans should go after him. But do you think they would be considering what the Giants were offering? Do you think they would have been in a better place now than where they're by having Darnold than where they are at now with having Cam Ward? Because we talked about them not needing a quarterback and them wanting to trade out of that number one pick last year, and maybe it wouldn't have been as easy because everybody knows you're not drafting Cam Ward number one, so it would have been a little bit harder to possibly get what you wanted.
Man, I've gone back and forth on this one because the Titans are not what are they with Darnold this past season, right? They're not 3-14, but they're on the cusp of the playoffs. What would we say there, just given how some of these games went?
An extra, I think they'd have won maybe five or six games, six.
Okay. So, like, if that's the case, and we're just looking at it from – we're taking away the coaching change and all that. I mean, does six wins keep Callahan's job? I'm just trying to play revisionist history here. Mm-hmm. They're still kind of in a purgatory situation right now. They've got the draft picks, though.
Mm-hmm.
But really, with all the draft picks, you want to use that on a quarterback up top. But there's not a quarterback that – you know, it's not number one that, again, with the – I'm looking at it without Brian Daboll and without Saleh here. You've got Darnold, but it's a short-term deal. You're either extending Darnold or you're in a spot where you're drafting the backup future starter, and I don't see that in this draft either. I don't know what Cam Ward's going to become, but I don't think this team depth-wise is much different. They're about to get a lot better. I prefer the premier picks, but in this situation – as far as where they are, win-loss record, and the trajectory and the outlook, I don't think it's vastly different, Mace. I see a three-win team to a five- or six-win team. And again, I don't think the fan base is just clamoring for season tickets based off of that.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow has been our guest on D. Mace, Vingan, and Donaghy. He joins us every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Hutton, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
Yeah, absolutely. And do me a favor, Adam, and stop putting songs in Willie's head.
Come on, man. We can't even get reunited to get played.
Exactly.
I know.
It's a small world.
It's like Willie's song on Underdog Picks. That always sticks in my head.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Hopefully that's better than It's a Small World.
It is much better.
It's much better.
Catchier much catchier, too.
Hutton will catch up with you next week.
What would be your Coach Snoop team that you would want to follow and have Snoop Dogg's job like he has at the Olympics? I think it's the best game.
Oh, luge, probably.
The luge. But, like, if you could take it anywhere in the world and just be the guy that follows the team, no pressure, you're just there for support, for positive vibes, and you get to enjoy all the sights and sounds?
Man, it would be a premier soccer club, just based on the fact that I've never really experienced that, and it's a different type of edge and fan base.
And you're not emotionally attached to the team. That probably helps you get everybody through the highs and lows. You're more
and Willie. I mean, all three of you know this. Like behind the scenes, you kind of know kind of the rhythm and flow of any pro league in this country. I have no idea what it's like there.
No, Ted Lasso is about my only connection to that.
Right. So, like, the venues are practically the same, but there it's much different. I've only been to one Premier League game, and I would love to go back.
Get Hutton on a plane to England pronto.
That's right.
Nice.
We'll catch up with you next week, Hutton.
See you guys.
615-737-1025. Let's go back to the Titans offseason for a moment. There are a ton of holes on the Titans roster, and I'm wondering about one player in particular and how much money would we be willing to throw at this player in free agency. We'll discuss that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
Derek Mason here. If you've injured yourself in a motorcycle accident, go to LawTigers.com for your free case evaluation. Even if your accident was months ago, you have nothing to lose by calling Law Tigers. Insurance companies want to pay out as little as possible, or frankly, nothing at all. But Law Tigers fights to get you the compensation you deserve and doesn't get paid until your case has been settled. They understand how much your bike gear is worth to you, so they will help you get it all repaired or better yet replaced. So go 1-800-LAW-TIGERS or visit LawTigers.com. Law Tigers is powered by Freeman & Fewson, and you can find them in Nashville, located at 2126 21st Ave South. And don't forget, go to PredatorsBike.com to enter to win a custom Nashville Predator Indian motorcycle signed by the entire team, courtesy of Law Tigers and Music City Indian. That's Law Tigers, Tennessee's motorcycle lawyers.